Earlier today, police and soldiers in Bahrain swept through the Pearl Roundabout, the focal point of protests to demand democratic reforms. Reports say at least five people were killed and others injured, and authorities used tear gas and rubber bullets. The King of Bahrain announced a three-month state of emergency, and protest leaders fear that mass arrests may be next. Bahrain is a small island just off the coast of Saudi Arabia in the Persian Gulf. While it has little oil and natural gas, its capital, Manama, is the home port of the United States' Fifth Fleet. If you have questions about the situation in Bahrain, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. NPR foreign correspondent Frank Langford joins us from Manama in Bahrain. And nice to have you with us, Frank.
Hi, Neil.
And can you tell us, give us some more details on what happened today at the Pearl Roundabout?
Yeah, I was actually staying in a hotel right by there, and a little after 6 o'clock, I'd say, a lot of tanks, armored personnel carriers kind of rolled up next to the Persian Gulf, and hundreds of police in riot gear went to the roundabout, firing a lot of tear gas. According to the protesters, rubber bullets and some shotgun shells. And I was very close at the time. The tear gas was overwhelming, and they pushed them out of the roundabout and then kind of chased them to some degree, pursued them through some of the back streets. And so they took it rather easily. Of course, these protesters, they've been there for almost 5 weeks. It's been the biggest crisis the country has seen in a long time, and they were calling for a much more democratic system and not the monarchy that exists now.
A much more democratic system, though, would definitely challenge the monarchy. It's a Sunni family that controls the country and a Sunni elite that's in charge there. The majority of the population is Shia.
Absolutely. And most everyone I went to talk to when I would go to the protests, when I would go to the Pearl Roundabout, were Shia. And some of them have done well financially, but they feel that they're very heavily discriminated against, especially for jobs. They can't join much in the police force or the military, can't participate in those things. And people would often say, you know, they would go for a job interview and someone would say, you have the wrong name, and they would either not get an offer or not be able to, get a decent job at a different place. So they were looking to they were hoping for a constitutional monarchy, a fully elected parliament, and just a chance to have more access to opportunities in this society.
In the meantime, there have been, the government has blown hot and cold, sometimes repressing the demonstrators, sometimes saying, we will allow you to demonstrate. This time, it seems like a definite signal.
I think so. This was an attempt, and so far it's been successful, to really break the back of this rebellion. They've held this symbolic, what's become a symbolic area, this Pearl Roundabout, for quite some time. This is the biggest show of force that anyone's seen. And as you mentioned earlier, yesterday actually forces came in from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to back up the Bahrainis. So it was a real show of force, not just in Bahrain, but in the Arabian Peninsula, the Gulf states saying, you know, we're going to stick with monarchies. We're not going to go for, you know, a much more open democratic system.
Well, the situation that exists in Bahrain is to some degree mirrored in the eastern provinces of Saudi Arabia. A very large fraction of the population there is also Shia. And yes, that had to be a signal from the King of Saudi Arabia as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of what's driving this is Saudi concerns. Bahrain, as you said, it's a small island in the Persian Gulf, but next to it is the biggest oil exporter on the planet and a key ally of the United States in this region. And it was very clear that the Saudis, who have an absolute monarchy, all the power flows from the king, were very concerned. They've seen these protests in the east among their minority Shia population. And they were very concerned that Saudi citizens were getting ideas by what they were seeing just across the causeway in Bahrain.
There's the other great power in the Persian Gulf is, of course, Iran. And there was a statement from Tehran yesterday saying that the interference by Saudi and other Gulf troops was unacceptable.
They are very unhappy with that. Of course, that is a Shiite country and a big rival of Saudi Arabia. So there's kind of a great power Persian Gulf rivalry going on here over Bahrain. And you have the Saudis literally coming in force. And Iran, which used to have claims to Bahrain, very upset about this, and I think genuinely very concerned about their fellow Shia here on the island.
We're talking with NPR foreign correspondent Frank Langfitt, who's in Manama, the capital of Bahrain. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. We'll go first to James, and James calling from Tucson. James, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Taking my call. I have one question. Do you think there's any consideration of removing U.S. troops given potential political instability? I know we've got a lot of troops there with the Navy's 5th Fleet.
Manama, as we mentioned, the home port of the 5th Fleet. Frank Langfitt, any consideration that you've heard of removing U.S. forces?
Nothing solid. It's a great question. I think that especially given that they seem to be putting this protest down, I wouldn't expect any quick moves. But it'll be very interesting to see how the United States handles this. There have been complaints in the streets from people I was talking to this morning as we were all kind of getting tear gassed, saying, you know, we really feel like the United States should have been more supportive of the people who were pushing for change here. Unlike in, you know, in Libya and Tunisia, where the United States was very forceful, people here have felt that they weren't getting the kind of support that they hoped for. And they were disappointed about it, and they cited the Fifth Fleet. They said, well, you know, the United States is protecting its military interests here.
And thanks very much for the call, James. U.S. port where the Fifth Fleet is based is, it's technically Manama, but it's some distance from the downtown part of the city.
It is. I passed by it once driving around the area.
And so it's, to your knowledge, were U.S. forces in any way involved in any way in this political argument?
Absolutely not. I mean, I was on the ground. I was also up in a hotel room with my telephoto lens, and I was studying the troops as best I could from a little bit of distance. Absolutely no sign of U.S. forces.
The Pentagon, we hear today, authorized military family members and civilians with non-emergency jobs to leave Bahrain as a Shia uprising has spawned violence across the capital and the surrounding region. So at least non-essential personnel may have an opportunity to leave. Let's see if we go next to Tom. And Tom's with us on the line from Portland.
Hi. I have a friend, Janet, who's an office manager. She's a Filipino. And right there in Amoy Towers, near not far from Pearl. And they've been told to stay home the last several days. And is there any help from the U.S. for foreign nationals from other countries to get out and keep them safe?
Frank Langfitt, there are loads of foreign workers in Bahrain and indeed in other Gulf states, Filipino in this case. Any opportunity to help those?
There were some calls flying around this morning to foreign embassies. I'll be honest, since I was covering the story, I didn't make any of those calls. The city has been pretty much on lockdown since this morning. It was hard to get around. It's now a 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. curfew. And while people may get out of here, I think that today, maybe tomorrow will be a little bit easier. I can tell you that when I went out today, I actually walked towards one of the traffic roundabouts where there were police with masks on and shotguns. And they seemed very serious. I mean, they actually tried to get me to come over, and we were right around curfew time, and I just took off. So maybe tomorrow, if there's not more violence, things will let up a bit, and remains to be seen whether people need to rush out of here. It all depends, I think, on the situation on the streets.
Tom, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, sir.
And is there any sign of the Saudi or the Emirate forces on the streets?
Not that I've seen. Keep in mind, we ended up in a lockdown in the hotel. I have seen a photograph or two, and I've heard from some sources in Shiite neighborhoods that they did see Saudi armor on the streets. But I'm not sure that they saw Saudi troops participating. Right now, since it's very hard to move around the city, we're largely trying to get in touch with people by cell phone and bit by bit try to piece together a picture of what's going on out there.
And what are you learning about the plans of the opposition? Are they in full retreat at the moment?
The last conversation I had a few hours ago was complete retreat, and people were hiding in their homes. what I've also heard in these neighborhoods, and this happened last night, it was quite bloody, police were going into neighborhoods and just opening fire on people. I talked to somebody in the neighborhood today who said, literally, he said, you cannot put your head outside your door. There are people out there with guns, and they just shoot. So there's a lot of pressure on these Shiite neighborhoods right now. And I think maybe tomorrow, especially if we can get to a hospital or two, we might be able to get a better sense of what's actually happening out there, what the casualty numbers are like.
You talked about Shia neighborhoods. Do people live in areas that are very strictly sectarian?
They're pretty sectarian. I've been in mixed neighborhoods here, but there are a number of neighborhoods that are particularly very Shiite. And that's where the police have put a lot of pressure in the last several days. There was kind of a strategy, at least the protesters felt, that in order to pull people away from the Pearl Roundabout, they actually went. The police were going to attack their homes and force them to go back and defend their homes. And so people were building barricades. People were out, and they're not well armed. They had sticks and pipes and things like that, maybe bricks, to try to defend their neighborhoods against assaults by cops.
The protests have thus far been peaceful, and taking the model from Egypt, might that change?
Well, they have been mostly peaceful, but they've also been very provocative. They did go to they shut down the main highway here. They went and took over the financial center for a little while. Today, there were a few Molotov cocktails thrown, but not very effectively. And certainly, these people are not really, they're just not really armed. I mean, you're going up against shotguns and a lot of a very effective tear gas that some people find paralyzing. I mean, some people have been hit so badly with tear gas they end up in the hospital. So it's not remotely, it's very asymmetrical. The protesters don't have much to fight with. And today at the roundabout, they left without a big battle.
We're talking with Frank Langford, NPR correspondent, who's talking to us from Manama, the capital of Bahrain. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Toby. Toby with us from Independence in Kentucky.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
I'm very well, thank you.
I have a question that's really been on my mind quite a bit. From 1994 to 1997, I actually lived in Bahrain. My wife and I did. I was a member of the Fifth Fleet, and these demonstrations in Bahrain are nothing new. Now, certainly lately they've been significantly larger than what they've been, but from the 90s, the Shia population has had this agenda on their mind. And my question is this, does the activity in Egypt, Tunisia, Yemen, and Libya bring Manama Bahrain out, or did Manama Bahrain spawn all of these other uprisings?
Frank Langford.
It's a great question, Toby, and the answer from people that I talked to is they were inspired by what they saw elsewhere, and they saw this as a chance to take a real shot. They saw that what was happening in Cairo, and they followed suit. They really started in the middle of February. And then what radicalized people was cops went in and shot folks and ultimately killed about seven people last month. You would talk to protesters who say, you know, I really thought the protests were over the top until the police started shooting people. And then you had wealthy people who've done quite well here in society coming out to the protests because they really felt that very, very upset with the royal family and really turned on them. But Toby, you're absolutely right. There's a long history of protests here. There is a political consciousness. But they saw what was going on in North Africa, and they thought, you know, this is our opportunity.
Toby, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
He raises another point, though. Ultimately, the majority of the population in Bahrain is Shia, and they feel that they are not given enough voice in government. This seems to be a situation that cannot be sustained.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, for the moment, at least today, they said they did beat it back. But you're right. You're not talking about oppressing a minority here. You're not talking about 20% of the population or 15%. You're talking about what appears to be certainly the majority of the folks here. One of the complaints of the Shia is that the Sunni minority gives citizenship to many outsiders, to Pakistani Sunnis who I've met. Most of the police force is foreign, which upsets the Shia a tremendous amount. They consider it a mercenary police force. And what they suspect the Sunni minority has been doing is they give as much citizenship as they can to foreigners to try to balance out the tables. And they've seen that as a long-term strategy, which is another thing that they complain about and one thing that they're trying to stop.
One of the things the monarchy has always claimed, and it's to some degree a boogeyman, is that the Shia protests are Iranian-inspired. Well, might that come to be a reality if the Iranians find this so unacceptable?
Well, I think that when you talk to people at the Pearl Roundabout, you never heard much about that. They denied it, and they didn't really, in their political aims, they didn't indicate any sort of great affinity for Iran. I mean, there has been some concern among analysts that this will further radicalize Shia here and that it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we'll just have to see what the results are of the crackdown today.
NPR foreign correspondent Frank Langford with us from Manama in Bahrain. Thanks very much for your time.
You're very welcome, Neil.
And you can stay with NPR News for updates on the story, not just in Bahrain, but in Libya, Egypt, and Japan throughout the day. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.